Rosalind will join us in a couple of minutes to talk about how her family celebrated Christmas in New England and how she now celebrates in California. Morgan here, and right now you got your Happy Holiday by Percy Faith. And some holiday talk with a very famous lady, Art.
Now, here it is, Sunday, December 24th, and I'd like very much to find out something about your Christmas, Miss Rosalind Russell. Have you done your shopping as yet?
Oh, yes, yes. I've done my shopping, except for the very last minute things that have to do with the Christmas tree. That I often like to do, even the last minute. And I'm eternally buying additional things, so you can hardly see the green of it at all now.
Now, do you have any fond memories of Christmases past?
Oh, many. I'm sure you do, too, but many. You see, I'm from a very large family. I'm one of the seven children. And I came from Waterbury, Connecticut, from a very large and interesting house full of fireplaces, and we trim the whole household and with fur that we'd actually go out years ago and get and bring in, and it took us days to prepare for Christmas. One of the happiest times I think I ever knew was when I was allowed to go with my older brothers and sister midnight mass.
Mm-hmm.
And this was abolished later in several areas of this country, but now I think it exists again. I know it does for us in Beverly Hills again. And to go, I never forgot the first time. I was quite young, of course, but I was walking up this hill to the church with my oldest brother James and my sister Clara, that we called the Duchess, and my brother John. And I was allowed, that meant to stay up very late, you see, and watch all the preparations, and the relatives came in, and the hugging and kissing and the greetings, and that meant I could be up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you see. Then I really, that was a wonderful Christmas for me, and the snow happened to come down. It was just like the Christmas card, you know, and the church was rather a simple, plain church, and the lights was all pale yellow inside with the wonderful warmth of the lights and the music and the organ. I never forgot that one.
I don't blame you. That memory will live on forever
yes.
in your heart. Can you tell us about any of the special customs from those days that you've carried over in your home today?
Well, what happened when I went to the coast as a young actress, I was all alone, and I missed my family very, very much, naturally. And I decided that I would invite to my home what we call, quote, the strays, unquote. Others who were out there, such as myself, who didn't have their families, or they were in other areas of the country. So they were friends of mine, and I'd met at the Steel at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And they came, and I did the same sort of Christmas we did at home. We always had a buffet, late buffet, Santa Claus. My brother George used to play Santa Claus, and which was a grab bag.
Uh-huh.
And this has gone on in my own home now for 26 years, ever since I left and went to the coast. I mean, ever since I've been, prior to my marriage, actually. When I married Freddie, I said, oh, he had a lot of strays.
Mm-hmm.
And he had many lawyer friends that were bachelors and so on and so forth, and we included them. Well, let me tell you now that we not only have all these people and their friends, but they've all married, and now we have their children. But it's a great, great night, and the finest night we have in our home is Christmas Eve.
Well, then, Christmas is definitely one of the biggest holidays of the year for you.
Oh, indeed it is.
Well, it is for me, and I'm sorry I've kept you so long. I think that we ought to go our own ways now and celebrate this joyful holiday.
And I want to wish you a very merry and blessed Christmas.
Thank you, likewise. We have been talking to Miss Rosalind Russell here on Christmas Eve. This is Art Fleming speaking for Monitor.
Very nice. Good, good. Just gives me an idea. I think that this Christmas Eve I'll go out and decorate me. Snoopy's Christmas, Snoopy of Peanuts fame, Snoopy the famous pilot, in wild pursuit of the dreadful Red Baron.
Oh, by gosh, by golly, It's time for mistletoe and holly. Tasty pheasants, Christmas presents, countryside's covered with snow. Oh, by gosh, by jingle, it's time for carols and Kris Kringle. Overeating, merry greetings from relatives you don't know. Then comes that big night, giving the tree the trim. You'll hear voices by starlight singing a Yuletide hymn. Oh, my gosh, by golly, it's time for mistletoe and holly. Fancy ties and granny's pies and folks stealing a kiss or two as they whisper Merry Christmas.
Jack Jones with all that mistletoe and holly. 51 weeks of the year, Al Capp goes around bah humbugging, and then at Christmas, he sort of drops the Scrooge bit and goes soft on us. That's Al. Here's Al, Monitor's other expert on nothing, with opinions on everything. We'll have a small delay. Possibly Al has changed his character so radically that he's all but invisible. So while we're looking for the real Al, here's some old toy trains.
Now, the very finest gift anyone ever gave me was a paint-splattered, knee-length artist smock. It was when I was 19 years old and I was an art student in Boston. Actually, I was the only air-conditioned art student in town. I was in that condition because I owned one pair of pants. And I had owned that pair of pants so long that it first sprung at the seat, then unraveled and unraveled and unraveled. And finally, the seat had totally vanished. By a coincidence, one also happened to be the exact number of shorts in my possession at the time. And the seat of that had disappeared, too, due to the wear and tear of daily wear and nightly scrubbing. It didn't affect my social life, mainly because a guy in that condition isn't apt to have much of one, but it did create a serious educational problem. It was simple enough at school to back up to my locker and remove my top coat. And with some practice, it was also perfectly simple to hang it in my locker, doing everything backwards. Now, the insoluble problem came when I started walking away from that locker. I'm sure some of you out there in Radioland are asking if I couldn't solve that problem by not removing the jacket of my suit. Now, the answer to that is that if I owned a whole suit, I'd have said so. Now, I said, if you remember, I owned one pair of pants, no more, no less. And so every day, I'd borrow a smock from some other kid's locker. Now, I was careful to pick kids who didn't take classes with me, and all went well until one day during a prospective lecture, the teacher was interrupted by a phone call. He listened, glared at me, and that was easy because I was seated in the very first row, and then he said, into the phone right away and hung up. And then he said to me, I'm afraid you've mistakenly taken the Robinson boy's smock. He's waiting outside in the corridor for it. Please return it to him, and I'll hold the lecture until you come back. Well, I prayed for lightning to strike me dead before I came back, because if by any chance it didn't, my secret would be revealed to the world, especially to a girl named Catherine Cameron, who I'd never spoken to much, but who I daydreamed about dating if ever I came into a complete pair of pants. Well, the Robinson boy was waiting in the corridor, and I gave him his smock. And behind me, a voice then said, I hope this one fits you. It was Catherine Cameron. She had taken off her smock and was holding it up for me to slip into. She had followed me out of that classroom. She had known my secret. She'd always known it. Well, now, I never quite managed to give Catherine Cameron a gift equally valuable, although I've been trying to think of one every Christmas for 33 years since the time we were married. And this is Al Capp, who has more pants than he has bodies to put in nowadays, speaking to you on NBC's Monitor.
I told you Al wasn't all bad. Now we're going to take a pause and see whether everybody here has the proper spirit. Just as a suggestion, old toy trains.
Old toy trains, new toy tracks, little boy toys coming from a sack. Carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little boy, don't think it's time you were in bed. Close your eyes, listen to the skies. All is calm, all is well. Soon you'll hear Kristen Kringle and the jingle bells bringing old toy trains. Little toy tracks, little boy toys, coming from a sack, carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little boy, don't think it's time to go in bed. Close your
in O. Henry's Christmas Story, the tramp who tries to get arrested so he can be in a warm jail for Christmas, and he does several illegal things, and they always let him go. And finally, he hears music from a church, and he stands there on the street listening and growing mellow, and he's picked up for loitering. Here for our NBC stations along the line, one of which is WOPI, in Bristol, Tennessee, Virginia. This is Miss Morgan.
What if the winter brings ice and snow?
What if the warmth your heart makes you glow?
You want a feeling if you send a feeling with me.
This is NBC, The Night Before Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
Now be a good little boy, and Santa will bring you presents for Christmas, okay?
Okay, thanks, Santa.
Oh, little boy, that's my lunch. Don't eat my Wetson's hamburger, little boy. Now, why did you do that? I was going to bring you a pony and a dog and a car. What else do you want for Christmas?
Deck the halls and give a cheer for all the things that Christmas is each year. Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, when all your wishes.
Orchestra, all on a Christmas morning.
Thank you.
the meadow and through the woods to Grandmother's house we go. Them were the days, folks, way back then, when couriers spoke only to Ives, and the only real horsepower was real horses. Well, if you're on your way anywhere this Christmas Eve, good old Monitor will keep you company. This jolly gent is Burl Ives.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas.
On the Mexico City Olympics, Monitor Sports, brought to you by Lincoln Mercury, home of better idea cars, from the makers of Lincoln Continental.
This year, when we introduced our all-new Mercury Montego, we told ourselves, this Mercury's got it. And we sincerely believed our new Montego was the equal of any other luxury intermediate. We were wrong. For in our eagerness not to be outdone, we made our Montego two-door hardtop, for example, about half a foot more car than its three leading rivals, with 4 inches more riding comfort in the wheelbase, 20% more usable trunk space, and more rear seat legroom. But that isn't all. We built our new Montego with a fine car touch, inspired by Lincoln Continental, with 2.5 inches of thick foam padding in the seats, rich wood grain vinyl finish on the dash, deep wall-to-wall carpeting. Luxury the others charge extra for. Mercury Montego's got it, the fine car touch, and at no extra cost. So instead of making our new Mercury Montego just as good as the competition, we wound up making it much more. Son of a gun.
Now, here's Jay Miller with a report on the forthcoming Mexico City Olympics.
Mr. Roberto Casillas is Director of Public Relations for the forthcoming 1968 Olympic Games. I wonder if you could tell us something about the press arrangements that you've made. How many journalists are you expecting here in Mexico City?
According to the arrangements that were made by the International Olympic Committee in Tehran, we're expecting approximately 1,100 newspaper men.
For the press people, you're building special facilities, aren't you, in a press center for housing?
That's right. We will have a special press center in the Olympic Village.
Mm-hmm.
And then we shall make accommodations for those who wish to remain downtown in Hotel Marisabel and some of the other main hotels downtown.
You're getting a lot of interest from the United States, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Mr. Casillas, in general terms, what facilities will you be providing for the press so they can get their news back to the various countries of the world?
For one thing, we are counting on the services of the computers by Olivetti. Then arrangements are being made to furnish with big press center with all the teletype and telephone services that may be required to give the press people as an ample facilities as possible.
But how are they going to get around from various locations?
Perhaps if you were here during the third international competition, you were able to find out the number of buses that we are providing. We're setting a series of lines servicing the various sports centers, and also lines that will go across the city. An ample number of buses will be provided for the purpose.
About how many locations in Mexico City will be used for the Olympic Games?
Well, approximately 15 altogether.
What about traffic? Now, traffic in Mexico City without the Olympics is a problem. What about it with the Olympics? Are you going to be able to handle all the cars of visitors that will be coming down here for the Games?
The traffic is a problem anywhere in the world. We are counting on a system of direct routes of high-speed avenues to service all of the various Olympic sites. We hope that we can handle all of the traffic that comes down. I have a brief experience lately, having gone to the Astrodome in Houston. It took us about an hour and a half to go back to the hotel. There were only 53,000 people in the Astrodome, yet it took us that long. I think that for any city, the traffic is a problem.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roberto Casillas, the Director of Public Relations for the forthcoming Olympic Games. This is Jay Miller in Mexico City for Monitor Sports.
Speaking of traffic, was anybody? There's a lot of football traffic coming up on NBC. The East-West Shrine Game, December 30th, and the big triple header on New Year's Day, the Sugar, Rose, Orange, Banana, Lemon, and Lime Bowl Games, all on NBC. Now a word about Autolite.
You're listening to the car that won the Indianapolis 500. A.J. Foyt's $50,000 Coyote Ford. A high-price racing car with a low-price ignition coil. It's an Autolite coil, almost a carbon copy of the one you buy, under $10. How come a low-price Autolite coil in a $50,000 racing car? Because there is no better coil, not at any price. Get Autolite ignition parts for your car, whatever kind you drive.
For more sports news over the weekend, stay with Monitor.
Hello, folks. This is Jack Benny. You know, for some strange reason, I'll never understand why, a lot of people think I'm very frugal, close with the dollar. So, okay, let's say cheap. That's why I want to take this opportunity on Monitor to wish everyone a very, very Merry Christmas. There. Have you ever heard such a generous greeting? Besides, that takes care of my Christmas cards.
sometimes dry, sometimes wet. Was usually pink, but oftentimes red, as it lay so innocently in bed. The best gift of the
In 3 minutes, Davy Wayne recalls his childhood Christmases in Michigan on the Monitor Beacon. 12 minutes before the hour, Monitor and Morgan. Esta noche es la noche buena y no es una noche de dormir. What'd he say? That's an old Latin American thing, friends. This night is the good night, not a night to sleep. Wasn't it awful when you were a child and trying to get to sleep on Christmas Eve? Well, now we're all grown up insomaniacs. Insomaniacs? On NBC, you say a thing like that? Now that we can't sleep, let's have another eggnog and forget it. Fiedler and the Boston Pops. This is the 13th year that Monitor has shared the spirit of the holidays with everybody, so we do have sort of a tradition of our own. A couple of them. One of them is hearing the reminiscences of an actor known to all of you about his Christmas as a boy. The gentleman is Davy Wayne.
My thoughts go back to those golden Christmases of childhood. I'm sure you find yourself thinking similar thoughts. Your mind wanders, searching, sorting, and then the flash of a vivid memory, and once again, you're a kid at Christmas. My boyhood Christmases all occurred in a wonderful farming community in the winter snow belt of the Midwest. That town is Bloomingdale, Michigan, population 500 human beings, and enough dogs, cats, and other pets to warm the heart of any child year-round. Christmas in Bloomingdale really started about 2 or 3 weeks before December 25th. In fact, right after Thanksgiving was over. And oh, what strange, wonderful, and sometimes even mysterious activities there were. The knowing glances that swiftly passed between members of the family, the whispered conversations that suddenly stopped when I entered the room, the smiles, the hugs, and most of all, the smells. Ah, the smells from a country kitchen, rich and pungent, warm and exotic. It was enough to widen the eyes, make the nostrils tremble, and make the mouth of a youngster water with anticipation.
A Bloomingdale, Michigan Christmas always centered around the church, your religion, and the retelling and even reenactment of that first blessed Christmas. Perhaps this is where young David Wayne, the nativity play Wise Man, first felt the urge to become David Wayne, the actor. I don't know. But I do know that I was cast as just about every male character in the annual cantata at the Bloomingdale Baptist Church. I probably wasn't very good, but what I lacked in dramatic ability, I made up for in childish enthusiasm and pride for having even been chosen. Christmas in Bloomingdale meant frantic preparations, warm ceremonies, special privileges, and most important, a sacredness of which the whole family was aware. Oh, yes, I haven't told you about my family, have I? Well, my mother was good Aunt Lena. My father was Uncle Al, partner in the Bloomingdale General Store. There was Sister Mabel, who always came home to the country for Christmas, leaving the big city where she taught school in Cleveland, Ohio. The most vivid feeling in that house at Christmas can be expressed in one word, love. And it was all the more important to me since I was a foster child. And to think of the elaborate preparations for the arrival of Santa. Uncle Al always placed newspapers on the floor leading from the fireplace to the tree so Santa wouldn't stain the rug with his snowy wet boots, of course. And sure enough, those tracks from fireplace to tree, wet footprints made by huge rubber boots, were there for me to see when I awoke Christmas morning. No child could ask for greater proof than this that Santa is real, alive, and very loving, especially towards children. I particularly remember one year when I wished so desperately hard for my first real sled. Christmas Eve came while Aunt Lena, Uncle Al, and young David Wayne kept a lonely and quiet vigil. And suddenly my heart started to pound. Could I be imagining things, or were those the sounds of sleigh bells outside the door I heard? A deep snow covered the town that year. The bell sound stopped, and one large thump sounded at the front door. Aunt Lena and Uncle Al urged me to open the door. I did, and I'll never forget the feeling as a huge snowdrift spilled into the room, and with it, my sled from Santa. Of course, weeks before Christmas Eve, Uncle Al and I were very busy finding the decorations in the attic, stringing popcorn to trim the tree, repairing the clip-on real candles, not electric lights, which would not be lighted until the ceremony of Christmas Eve. And oh, the solemnity of picking the tree. Uncle Al and I would scout the surrounding woods, choosing very carefully the most stately and handsome pine, fir, or balsam. It would be cut down with the skill of a surgeon, tenderly carried to the house and placed in its spot of honor, ready to receive its decorations. When does your family open the Christmas presents? Well, in Bloomingdale, Michigan, I would be given the job of going to the tree when the family had gathered on Christmas Eve, selecting a gift, reading the card aloud, carrying it to the person for whom it was intended. And then we'd all watch in silence as the gift was slowly opened, just to prolong the exquisite suspense. And with the present open and the contents shown around, the room's silence would be broken by the oohs and ahs of each member of the family. There was never any coal in the stocking of a Bloomingdale child. Santa would never be that cruel. Even the pets were remembered. Our cat would get a Christmas can of salmon. And then came Christmas Day, almost an anticlimax, actually. What were the heady thrills of Christmas Eve behind us? But the highlight of the day was the feast. And oh, what a turkey Aunt Lena served. What a table she set. Friends and relatives would join around the groaning board, and the day would be spent much the same as your Christmas days were at your house when you were a child. Friendly talk, feasting, laughter, warmth, and as I said before, much love. These days, the Wayne family of Westport, Connecticut, observe many of those so-called old-fashioned customs. My wife, Jane, and my 17-year-old twin daughters, Melinda and Susan, along with my 15-year-old son, Timothy, share with me the basic and age-old traditions of the season. If there is any difference from today's Christmas as compared with yesterday's, perhaps it is that there is less formal religious ceremony, but there is just as much love as there ever has been. And I think that's probably what the birth of Jesus meant.
That was David Wayne. Several years ago, we asked him to share his memories of those early years in the Midwest. He did, and those recollections have since become one of our annual monitor features. This is Henry Morgan. News coming up on the hour.
This is NBC, The Night Before Christmas.
Hello, this is Dr. Joyce Brothers on WNBC, Plaza 7, 8866.
This listener's problem, child raising and the absentee father. The answer.
In order for your son to grow up to be a masculine person, he has to have a masculine image. And if he doesn't have any chance to be with
you... Dr. Joyce Brothers, weekdays from 9 to 10 a.m. on WNBC.
Change later on in life.
It's Hanukkah time, a time to celebrate the rebirth of freedom, a time to remember the miracle of a light that burned for 8 days, a time to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the independence of the State of Israel at this year's Hanukkah Festival for Israel at Madison Square Garden, 50th Street and 8th Avenue, January 1st. It's time for you to call OR79344, OR79344, for ticket information. Whatever the issue, Brad Crandall's a volume of information. Call him weeknights after the 9 o'clock news on WNBC New York. Radio City time, 5 o'clock.